What's up, everybody? It's Isaac on the intro to the intro. Today is a bonus episode. That means if you're a supporter, congratulations. You're getting the full bonus episode of April, and we're going to talk about Easter, and you're going to love it, and it's going to be great. If you're a free feed loser, you might not love it. I'm going to give you a taste of what you're going to get into when you sign up, because you will, because you love to go ad-free. You love all these bonus episodes we've been giving you every month, going back to 2017. And especially, you know, maybe you're, there's a demographic out there, the Christian warrior and the free feed loser. If you're that demographic, this is the show you want to sign up to hear, because I'm going to arm you with the sword of truth today, so that the next time, you know, maybe you know some hot topic goth teenagers, and you try to profess your love of Christ, and they roll their eyes, and you know what do they say? You know, nice patriarchal fairy tales. No. They're going to tell you that the pagans were the first ones and the Christians stole the pagan holiday of Easter. And I'm here to tell you, that's not the truth. And I'm going to expose it all today. I even eat a little bit of humble pie because your boy got it wrong 12 years ago when I started this journey. You'll hear about it. So take a listen. If you're on the free feed, you're going to get a little preview, a little taste of what you're in for. If you're already a supporter, thank you for your support. You make the podcast a reality, and I really mean that in every sense of the word. Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Wiseup. Today, we're going to talk about Easter. I'm going to talk to you about the symbolism behind it. We're going to finally debunk or prove the origins of this holiday. Is it Christian? Is it pagan? Who stole it from who? And I've gone back and forth on this over the years. In fact, in my very first book, I had a whole section on holidays, the holy days. And in that book, called A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, you don't even need to pay for it. Just go to my website, IlluminatiWatcher.com. Up top, it'll say free book, or you'll get hit with the pop-up light box. Put in your email, Addy, and I'll send it to you free. But anyways, there's a section in there about Easter. When I wrote A Grand Unified 11 years ago, I was heavily influenced by David Icke, Zeitgeist thinking, and ancient aliens. These are Gnostic falsehoods. A lot of these are Gnostic falsehoods. A cult, if you will. According to me. According to the Orthodox Christian perspective. Now, that doesn't mean you throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's still some interesting ideas that could be true, could have some relevance. Like I always say about the occult, it's not all bad. But when you get down into the weeds of the dogma and the doctrine behind it, you may be surprised at what you're supposed to believe in. So let's see what my dumb ass said back 10 years ago. I said Easter revolves around the goddess Ostara, a.k.a. the Babylonian goddess Ishtar, a.k.a. Eostre, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, a.k.a. the moon goddess, a.k.a. Semiramis, a.k.a. the Egyptian goddess Isis, the Greek Aphrodite, the Roman Venus, all right? The idea that all these things go back to one idea of a goddess. Ostara is the Old English spelling and origin for the name of Easter. In pagan history, human sacrifices occur on the first Sunday after the first new moon after Ostara. It celebrates the return of Semiramis in her reincarnated form of the spring goddess Eostre. This is part of the revolving phases of the triple goddess of the female deity mentioned earlier. Now, as you could surmise, I'm going to debunk a lot of these thoughts that I originally had, because again, I was under some false influences, I think. But that idea is something you're going to see on social media. That paragraph I just read you from my own words, that's an idea you're going to come across, especially around Easter, especially on social media. There is a fondness right now in trying to tear down Christianity. You know, this underdog phenomenon, this idea of being oppressed. A lot of people feel like Christianity oppresses their daily lives. So they want to fight back. They don't like the idea of being obedient to the sky daddy that has all these rules about worshiping him. Well, I mean, I don't think it's any different than a marriage or a relationship. You know, you got to love each other. It's not a rule, but I mean, if you don't have a relationship and communicate and talk and show love, things will fall apart. That's all it is. But people get it real twisted, you know. They really want to sell this idea of oppression behind it. Because I get it. There's oppressive elements, at least in the past, right? But we were a different culture, it turns out, hundreds of years ago. Let me keep reading from my book. The Easter egg is a Babylonian legend that claims the goddess Ishtar, again, Semiramis, fell from heaven in an egg. And the Easter egg hunt is based from the tradition of looking for Ishtar and finding her. This would allow her to be reborn and bestow blessings upon the finder, the person. Semiramis / Ishtar is the goddess of fertility because of this rebirth egg legend. The rabbit symbol comes about because of the speed of procreation, which went along with the fertility legend. And the tradition of fasting for Lent is supposedly a tradition that comes from the Babylonian god Tammuz. He died at the age of 40, and every day of Lent is considered 1 year of Tammuz's life, and the time is spent in fasting to mourn for Tammuz. Now, you probably say, well, Isaac, I mean, you're saying all these things. Did you make those up? No, I didn't make those up. I found those in a variety of sources. I'm going to give you one source right here. Then at the end of this, then after, we're going to talk about the rebuttal to these theories that it's all fake news, basically. One book I have is by Imam Alauddin Shabazz, which, I mean, you can see there's a religious angle there, right? And it's called Symbolism, Holidays, and Myths. I'm going to read you right from the book. Stop and think about, because Imam Shabazz is basically saying that Easter is not a Christian holiday, all right? He says, stop and think for a moment. Can you see any logical connection between brightly colored eggs, cottontail rabbits, new hats, and the account of the life, the death, and resurrection of Jesus? Certainly no basis exists in the Bible for drawing any such connection. Nor, for that matter, is there any example in the Bible of Christians attending Easter sunrise services, eating hot cross buns, putting ashes on their foreheads, or observing Lent. Now, reading this, if you didn't know any better, you'd say, oh, wow, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But once you know better, you say, that makes no damn sense. You're telling me in the Bible there's no references to observing some kind of Lenten period? Well, we'll talk about it, right? And again, I'm going to throw this out there in case you didn't know, in case you don't know who I am. I am not a theologian. I'm not even a good Christian. All right? So, I mean, I could be deceived. That's all I'm trying to say. So, rabbits and eggs. What's up with that? And Shabazz, he had the same angle I did in my own book, where he's questioning the actual origin of Easter as a pagan ritual, okay? He cites how Easter's derived from a pagan goddess, that Ostara I was talking about earlier. And he cites the Webster Dictionary. He says the Webster Dictionary even shows Easter as a Teutonic goddess of spring. Well, I looked at Webster Dictionary online, which, granted, this book is, I don't even know how old, many years old. But today, it says that the etymology comes from the Old English Easter, but the definition says a feast that commemorates Christ's resurrection and is observed with variations of date due to different calendars on the first Sunday after the Paschal full moon. It says, or the scholars that say Eostre is the Anglo-Saxon spring goddess name 1,000 years before Christ. Which, I mean, in a way it makes sense. Spring is the time of renewal,
rebirth, kind of. The earth is coming back to life after being dead all winter. So they did a feast of regeneration, allegedly, these pagans, these earth worshipers, and did sexy time rituals, which is the claim that that's where all these bunnies and eggs come from. Fertility. Problem is, rabbits don't lay eggs, folks. We'll find out what's going on with that. But they say rabbits, they're so fertile, they symbolize an abundance of life. And all these things, okay? Now, Shabazz, I'm going to read again from the book. He says, Eastern pagan Roman Greece was a time when great sexual orgies took place. The Easter parade was one of virgins ready to indulge in sex. The name April means in etymology to open up. The rabbit atop some eggs, etc., reinforces the sexual implication in the Easter festival. Rabbits don't lay eggs. Even fowls do not produce colored eggs. All these things have a symbolic meaning. Now, he also goes on and he said, and he reiterates the same legend I had heard about the pagan god Tammuz dying and resurrected. So they mourned his death. And they had this pyramid, this period of mourning, this Lenten season, just like the Christians. And he cites that he got that from Alexander Hislop's book, The Two Babylons. I also have a copy of that. Protestant Alexander Hislop. And in that book, he basically lays out the argument that Catholic traditions, he's picking on the Catholics mostly, Catholic traditions are all pagan. You know, they're really putting the Roman and Roman Catholic. And of course, his angle is that, you know, he's a Protestant. Protestants are the only one worshiping the true God. All right. Now, this book is not an easy read. I will warn you, I've not read it cover to cover. But chapter one, he does say this. The gigantic system of moral corruption and idolatry described in this passage under the emblem of a woman with a golden cup in her hand, making all nations drunk with the wine of her fornication, is divinely called mystery, Babylon the Great. And he goes on to talk about how Semiramis was employing what they call the Chaldean mysteries. And there's all this talk of the mysteries. And he's saying that the mysteries are a reference to the Whore of Babylon's licentiousness, attacking the idea of communion, right? Because they call that the mysteries too. Well, in the book, he talks about how Semiramis is the foundation of all worship. Again, same idea. All of this stuff goes back to the worship of the goddess archetype. Going back through Babylonian Ishtar to the Roman Empire, because Semiramis was Nimrod's consort, and Nimrod was the founder of Babylon. And Semiramis, or Ishtar, was pregnant with Nimrod, or she was pregnant. Okay, Nimrod was killed, and his consort, Semiramis, Ishtar, she was pregnant when Nimrod was killed. So when she gave birth to Tammuz, she declared that Tammuz was actually Nimrod resurrected. And Hislop says all goddess worship goes back to this foundational idea, the worship of Babylon, which I don't disagree with some elements of that. I think there is this worship of Babylon and pagan deities. I think that happens. Is Easter stealing from that idea? No, I don't think so. But anyway, it's a very confusing book. It's somewhat difficult to read if you're not a scholar on that kind of level. Or maybe I'm just a dumbass. Choose your reality, I always say. But sticking to Easter, in Hislop's book in chapter 3, he goes through the Christian holidays. And he says familiar things about how Christmas is based upon the Roman Saturnalia. Again, you know, they're doing the orgies. They're doing the gifts. They're doing all the things, right? They're doing a little human sacrifice. And then here comes the Christians and they say, well, let's just take over that day of Saturnalia and call it Christmas. And I subscribed to this for a long time. But in his and you could see over the years, a lot of people believed in this. Hislop talked about it in chapter 3. But in chapter 3, section 2, he talks about Easter. Let's see what he says there. He says that the 40 days of Lent was taken from the worship of Ishtar, again, Tammuz, right? But he also references the Yazidis, which is very interesting because that's these pagan devil worshipers in the Middle East. And if you read Peter Lavenda's The Dark Lord, I think that's where I read it, they talk about this interest in the Yazidis and their embracing of Satan. Shaitan. So anyways, I'm trying to link Shabazz's claim to Hislop. And sure enough, I found it. In Hislop's book, it says, among the pagans, this Lent seems to have been an indispensable preliminary to the great annual festival in commemoration of the death and resurrection of Tammuz, which was celebrated by alternate weeping and rejoicing, and which, in many countries, was considerably later than the Christian festival, being observed in Palestine and Assyria in June, therefore called the month of Tammuz, in Egypt about the middle of May, and in Britain sometime in April, to conciliate the pagans to nominal Christianity. Rome, pursuing its usual policy, took measures to get the Christian and pagan festivals amalgamated. So again, the idea that the Christians come along and they say, well, how do we get these pagans to start worshiping Christ? I know, let's have the same parties. Let's just all show up to the same parties. And that's the claim. And Shabazz says, that's where Lent came from. There are certainly no instructions in the Bible that Christians should observe it. And another guy named Doc Marquis also reiterated this. A lot of people repeat this, these claims. But Shabazz's angle is that back in the Roman Empire, which obviously was very pagan, the Christians needed the people to follow the new Christian faith. Constantine declared it as such. So they emulated the pagan rituals to make this sort of seamless transition. But is it true? Let's do a little Christian warrior fact check, all right? And I'm not going to fact check it for me because I'm an idiot. I'm going to tell you to go see Dan McClellan. Dan McClellan, I've been following his work for quite some time. I mean, in fact, I should read you his credentials because, let's see here. I'm going to read you his credentials. I should have had this ready. My apologies. Okay, this guy's done a lot of research. He's a student of language, religion, the Bible, and the ancient Near East. He's lived in a bunch of places. I think he lives in Utah now, ironically. Let's see. So he's got a bachelor's degree from Brigham Young University. He's probably Mormon, I'm guessing. I don't know him that well. I just found his work not too long ago. So he's got a bachelor's from Brigham Young in ancient Near Eastern studies, where he focused on biblical Hebrew and minored in classical Greek. Then he completed a Master of Studies in Jewish Studies at the University of Oxford in July 2010, Master of Arts in Biblical Studies in 2013 at Trinity Western University. In 2020, he defended his doctoral dissertation written for the University of Exeter on the cognitive science of religion and the conceptualization of deity and divine agency in the Hebrew Bible, and so on. So he's pretty smart with the stuff, right? But, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, the education, you've just been indoctrinated. Well, I don't know, maybe. I mean, you could take that angle, but I'll take him over some guy who barely passed high school. So he's done many videos on this, okay? You can find him on TikTok or Instagram. I follow him on both. TikTok, he's got sequenced videos you can comb through. That's where I watch all these. And I say we just get into it. There's one video is McClellan1255. He says that Easter is a Christian adaptation of Jewish Passover, right? And hence the name in the Greek Orthodox Church, we call it Pascha, which means Passover. He says, and I'm going to give you the notes, right? I just kind of paraphrase what he's saying. He's saying that the English and German variation is taken from the month the holiday was celebrated, so Ostara. So he's saying, yes, the Germanic spring deity of Ostara is the same time frame, but it's kind of retroactive. It's not the other way around. The Easter Passover holiday was already being celebrated, and then the Germans named the month after that. And that eggs and bunnies were added into the Christian belief system in medieval time, formalized in the 19th century. And there's symbols of the symbols of ancient spring deities that they talk about. They talk about Ostara being the spring fertility deity, and that's what, you know, Easter is based upon. These ideas actually came about from 19th century folklorists, and there's no data to support it. That's what he says. So Hyslop was wrong. Shabazz was wrong. This idea of Ostara being this Easter spring deity that the holiday was originally based upon apparently is not true. And I think we're going to come back to that here in a minute, because there's a few videos of his. I want to point out some of the information he presents. And if you recall, Adolf Hitler, he had subscribed to an occult magazine called Ostara. This was written by Lanz von Liebensfels, which I think is an alias, if I'm not mistaken. But he was pushing Germanic folklore, you know, Arianism, all these occult ideas. And he got all that from this pagan occultist Guido von List and Helena Blavatsky, which ties us into the Wizard of Oz. If you listen to my 4 Wizard of Oz shows, you already know who Blavatsky is and what theosophy is. And how they also say the same thing. They're like, no, no, no. There's one central god, and all these variations are just different takes on the same thing. Then there's, I don't have the number here. There's another McClellan video where he goes through each of the symbols, like the rabbits, right? We just talked about what Shabazz and Hyslop and my first book said, but the rabbits being the symbol of fertility for the, you know, the sexy time rituals. He says, no, rabbits are actually from medieval Christianity, and it was symbolism based upon the European brown hair, because the European brown hair was able to be impregnated twice at the same time. So the perception was that they were capable of parthenogenesis, which means a virgin birth, right? Just like the Virgin Mary. So medieval Christians associated the rabbit to the Virgin Mary. And they put the, you know, it was a brown hair, but they made it white as a symbol of purity or virginity, because Mary was a virgin when she was impregnated by God, the Immaculate Conception. Which parthenogenesis is a scientific way of saying that. In fact, if you recall, one of my favorite springtime movies is Wicker Man from 1973. Sergeant Howie, he goes to visit Lord Summer Isle, played by Christopher Lee, who's also very knowledgeable about the occult. And there's a bunch of hot goth nude chicks, hot witch babes, dancing around a fire outside. They're jumping over a bonfire. And Sergeant Howie, who's the Christian warrior, he's like, hey, Lord Summer Isle, what these hot goth chicks doing dancing around naked over a fire? And Summer Isle says, it's for parthenogenesis. They're trying to get impregnated by the nature god, the horned god of Wicca, maybe. What about the eggs, though? You know, what about the eggs? Well, the eggs, he says, they are associated with fertility and rebirth, but in early Christianity, the eggs symbolized resurrection. In medieval Christianity, they were shared as gifts just before the start of Lent, and then again to break the fast, because they were one of the few foods they could get to stay good during that 40-day Lenten period. And they would decorate them in colors also. In Greek Orthodox faith, they paint them red, or dye them red, I should say, to symbolize the blood of Christ. And originally, colored eggs in the medieval times apparently were traded between the elites and the priests, and it wasn't formalized for normal losers to do, the peasants, until much later. And then they had kids painting them and so on, right? So in the same video, Dan McClellan addresses Ishtar. And Dan McClellan says there's zero connection at all with Ishtar and Easter. It's 100% fabricated by people who thought that the word Ishtar looked a lot like Easter. Fair. He addressed the idea about these Easter orgies and the fertility orgies happening. So, because there was a claim made on the video that back in, you know, the pagan Ostara Ishtar days, they would have orgies on Easter so that 9 months later on December 25th, they would pop out some kids and then them kids would get the blood sacrifice treatment, probably to Moloch. All right. And he says that, they said that the blood sacrifices were being conducted to Horus. Because Horus was born on December 25th. That's what the Zeitgeist video tells us, right? The Zeitgeist video goes through all these religions and says, oh, you know, Christianity, the dying resurrected God is based on all these other religions. And they all have the same story. Dying and rebirth, born of a virgin, died on December 25th or born on December 25th, whatever you want to believe. And a lot of it's not true. A lot of it's simply just not true. But Dan McClellan sets the record straight. He says, look, first off, Horus is the god of the sky. Ra, which is Horus's eye, is the sun god. But neither of those Egyptian deities received sacrifices. Nor did, in case you're an Egyptian deity nerd, there's another one called Ra Horakhthi, which is a combined Horus and Ra god. He's saying, he also says that guy also didn't get sacrifices. So pump the brakes, Egyptian deity nerds, okay? And he says none of these gods were born on December 25th. And he said Christmas, this was interesting, he said Christmas is celebrated when it is on December 25th because early in the Roman Christian time frame, there was a belief that prominent historical figures die on the same day they were born. Okay, so Jesus was just slightly different, right? They set up his conception, not birthday, but conception day, to his death time at Passover, so March 25th. With the idea, again, based upon that, saying that, okay, he was conceived on March 25th, and he died on March 25th, so therefore, he must have been born 9 months later, December 25th. And we've talked about it on this show about how, well, you know, the shepherds were out in the field, which means it was not wintertime, was not December 25th. And McClellan says around 210 CE, early Christians marked his conception and death date to March 25th. You add 9 months to that, boom. There you go. Next, McClellan 1147. That's the video. Why did all this misinformation happen? That's the one I was looking for. I was like, okay, all right, you've convinced me, Dan. But why did all the misinformation happen? Well, he says probably from punching up against the oppressiveness of Christianity, which is what I believe too, claiming that they stole it from these marginalized groups, or that there's this, you know, it's like the Germanic folklore that the Nazis were pushing. There's this sacred pagan past, some true past stolen from the people. And people see the same repeated misinformation everywhere, so it must be true. I myself guilty of that as well. And he says, look, you know, websites can say whatever they want. Duh. Even peer-reviewed scholars get it wrong, though, he said. He said that critical scholarship may have actually started this. He gives some examples, including the moving the birth of Christ to December 25th. This guy's real smart. He goes into all this high level of detail. Like if you look at Ronald Hutton's 1996 book, Stations of the Sun, talks about it. Richard Cohen uses the same logic in a newer book. But if you dig down into it, he cites James Frazer's Golden Bough. And Golden Bough drew from an earlier manuscript. All this goes back to the same source, right? and it goes back to the 12th century. And a lot of the people that claim all this stuff from Christianity was stolen from the pagans, they cite they claim it's from the 4th century. Well, that's not even true. It's from the 12th century. And Fraser, he pulled a Latin quote written in a margin from the Bibliotheca Orientalis from this anonymous writer. And over time, people gave this thing more credibility. Now it's this 4th century serious claim. Well, it's not 4th century, it's the 12th, and it's not a manuscript, it's an anonymous note in a margin that Fraser found. I'm going to read it to you. But he's saying that, you know, Easter and this Christmas nonsense, it's kind of similar, right? It's this claim that is unfounded about Easter being based on the celebration of Ostara, a spring goddess, with the symbols of bunnies and eggs. And he says there's literally one source that you could track all these claims back to. And it goes back to this Christian monk, Beda, and he has a text called The Reckoning of Time. And he talks about a Germanic spring goddess named Ostara. And the Latin translation into English goes a little something like this. Eostermanat has a name. I sound like I was watching a lot of Twin Peaks, okay? And they do a little law of reversal talk. That's what that sounded like. Eostermanat has a name which is now translated Paschal Month, and which was once called after a goddess of theirs named Eostre, in whose honor feasts were celebrated in that month. And that's it. That's all of the ancient data provided about this spring goddess. And it was hundreds of years after Christianity. There's no talk of eggs. There's no talk of rabbits. And all that, all of those things came about from 18th, 19th century folklorists after rabbits and eggs had already been formalized into Christianity. So fake news, apparently. I'm going to give you a couple. He gives you a couple more resources you can check out if you really want to nerd out. There's a book, Pagan Goddesses in the Early Germanic World by Philip Shaw, or a letter. I don't know. What do you call it? It's not a book. No, I think that one actually is a book. But the rest of these are like essays. The Shifting Baselines of the British Hare Goddess by Luke John Murphy and Carly Amin. And Eostre and the Matrone Austriahene by Richard Sermon. I'm going to read you an excerpt from that abstract, from that one. It says, in the early 19th century, the goddess was imagined to have been a pan-Germanic deity named Ostara, and subsequently suggested to be the Germanic reflex of a more ancient Indo-European dawn goddess. However, by the latter half of the 20th century, many academics began to question the reliability of Beda's account, with these doubts now being reflected in wider reference publications. More recently, Eostre has been thrown a linguistic lifeline, not as a pan-Germanic or Indo-European deity, but as a local goddess in eastern Kent, said to have been shaped by naming practices that parallel the Romano-Germanic matron cults of the Lower Rhine region. So there you go. In conclusion, is Easter Illuminate confirmed? No, it is not. In fact, in Orthodoxy, we base the Paschal celebrations from the Bible, which predate all this pagan revisionist history. Example, Lenten fasting comes from a variety of ideas. Christ had 40 days of rejecting the temptation from the devil in the wilderness, which was prophesied with the Old Testament's Israelites wandering the desert for 40 years, as well as Moses on Mount Sinai, where he fasted for 40 days and nights in the book of Exodus. In fact, I'm going to read you straight from the Orthodox Study Bible. Jesus fasted to overcome temptation, giving us an example of our own power and limitations in the face of temptation. The hunger of his flesh does not control him. Rather, he controls his flesh. Our Lord's fast of 40 days is the foundation of the church's 40-day Lenten fast before Holy Week and of the fast before Christmas. And there's another proof to dispute this claim made by Shabazz and Hislop. There's actually more than just the one 40-day Lenten period in the Orthodox faith. There's multiple periods of the year. I think the Dormition, I don't remember. I don't remember. There's a few. There's a few of them. I know that much. And, you know, not everybody does them. You're supposed to. But there's not just the one. And eggs are a tradition in the Orthodox faith as well, like we already talked about. There's a game you play. Sugrisma, I believe it's how you pronounce it, where you everyone gets an egg at the table, a hard-boiled egg, dyed red for Christ's blood, and you go around and you try to crack everyone's egg, right? Try to crack everyone else's egg, symbolizing Christ resurrecting from the dead and breaking the shell, opening the tomb. You're supposed to say Christos Anesti, Alitos Anesti, which means Christ has risen, truly he has risen. So there you go. Is Easter Illuminate confirmed? No. Are all these pagans being pushing fake news of deception? Yes. They are Illuminate confirmed. Isaac's first book is Illuminate confirmed, it turns out. So there you go. So get that first book for free and you can check it out for yourself. A lot of the like I've talked about before. There's a lot of ideas in there. Some of them held true over these last 11, 12 years. Some of them, maybe not, right? Get it for free at IlluminatiWatcher.com. Sign up for the free email. The link is always in the show notes. Okay. I want to thank you for listening. Have a great Easter. Happy Pascha. Christos Anesti. All the things. Till next time, stay woke.